This is Mitchell Day with Mitchell's Front Page, live from Torquay on 94.7 The Pulse.
And we're just waiting on Andrew Kados to come walking through the front entrance here at Cafe Moby in Torquay to have those conversations. Because this is what happened. We spoke to Christine Cousins yesterday, and I explained to her that in Victoria, there were some difficult moments for the Labor Party. There was a swing against the government for Corregamite, obviously, of about 1.3%. And overall, statewide, there definitely was a swing to Labor, as you would expect, given that it was voting out a first-term government. Every first-term government goes through this. We saw it in 2010 with the Rudd-Gillard government, and we saw it, of course, back in 1998 with John Howard's government. So we sort of were expecting a swing against the government. That's what I said on the show before we went to the polls. I said that Malcolm Turnbull would be back with a reduced majority. However, when you look at Victoria, the swing to Labor has actually been quite small, whereas in New South Wales and Queensland, you saw massive swings in New South Wales of around 5%, in Queensland up as high as 7%. And of course, seats like Longman came into play. Of course, White Roy there, he's out of Parliament now, the youngest person ever to be in Parliament in Australia. And of course, he was the Minister for Innovation, as I said, whatever that job title involves. So that's the state of play, that in Victoria, the swing to Labor was much less. Christine Cousins didn't take responsibility. She said no. In Victoria, Labor already does pretty well. But some of the commentators were saying that it's been an issue with the state government, of course, in Victoria, and backlash against that. So in New South Wales, you've got a Liberal government. In Queensland, you've got a Labor government. But they were saying in New South Wales particularly, there was some backlash there against Mike Baird, the Premier, about some of the things they've been doing with council amalgamations and some of those other issues. So that's one thing I spoke to Christine Cousins about yesterday. But also we had to bring up the CFA, and she said that she didn't think it was really that big of a deal. But as we know, you had a massive problem there with different people showing up at booths, different volunteers saying, please don't put your hands on the CFA, so to speak. And that's what they were doing, and that's why potentially we might have seen in Corangamite a swing that was a bit smaller than what some might have anticipated. Definitely a few years ago, or even a few months ago, the swing was on in Corangamite, I would have thought, and the Labor Party could have gained that seat absolutely. Same with Dunkley, which we're going to be watching some of those results come through. In McEwen, you would have thought that the Liberal Party could gain that seat, but at the same time, there was a few issues down that way with the candidate showing up at Bill Shorten's event down there, and he tried to confront him, and it wasn't the best idea for the Liberal Party to do that. The media absolutely crucified him for that, and they followed him around, and it was very unpleasant. So that was why in McEwen the candidate turned out to not be quite up to scratch, and that's potentially why the government didn't pick up one extra seat down that way. So interesting times. And of course, looking at the issue more broadly, a lot of people very upset with Malcolm Turnbull, particularly in the Liberal Party, but even Bill Shorten's been calling for his resignation. But I was listening to some of the commentary on different radio stations last night, and people ringing up saying, Malcolm Turnbull, you should resign. So let's just wait and see what happens. They also said it was very telling that yesterday Bill Shorten went to Western Sydney and was out there campaigning and saying thank you to everyone that voted for us and all that sort of thing, whereas Malcolm Turnbull locked himself in his office all day and left George Brandis to go out there and front the media. Right, Andrew Kados is in the building, and we'll actually just bring him straight over now for a chat and see what's going on. It's always good to welcome him to our studios here in Torquay, our makeshift studio. How are you, Andrew? It's
not too bad.
Really
yourself?
Good to see you. I'm very well indeed, and what beautiful weather it is down here, as we keep joking about.
Yeah, this is a very traditional winter's day in
That's
Torquay.
Right. And as we were just saying before, we might have to have a wet weather plan, and Rose Hodge might have even flagged the idea of going to the Shire offices or something, so we'll definitely be following that up with her. But first of all, on Saturday, were you out there on the hustings? Were you campaigning for Sarah Henderson or Richard Lane?
Yes, I was on some booths here in Corangamite electorate, so it was at Mount Dunedin, Torquay as well, so I was on the booths for most of the day, actually.
What was the mood like down there? What were people saying to you as they went in to vote? Were they receptive of your materials that you were giving out?
Look, I think any polling booth, you're going to get people who'll take yours. You'll get people who just take yours. You get people who take everyone's to be polite and then you get some that just don't want yours. So that's pretty much the nature of a polling booth, no matter what the election.
And no one brought up any issues like we're going in to vote for the CFA or we're going in because we want to vote out this government or whatever?
No, there was no... You can really get a feeling when there's baseball bats towards a government. You get that feeling straight away on a polling booth. But that sense certainly wasn't there, that there was a queue of people wanting to get rid of the government. I think that's probably reflected in the end result. It's not it's a swing against the government.
Not many people change their votes, yeah.
I think here in Victoria, certainly the CFA issue certainly will dog Daniel Andrews for a while, and I certainly think it was an issue on Saturday.
Well, it was interesting because we had one of your very good friends, Christine Cousins, with us in the studio yesterday, a parliamentary colleague, and she said that the CFA thing backfired and there were massive swings to Labor at booths like Lara, where they had a big CFA presence. So I thought that was an interesting interpretation of results. What do you think about that?
Well, I think probably if you can, the blatant lies that were spread about the Labor Party about Medicare and the so-called Mediscare campaign, I think that certainly did have an influence on the election, so that would have particularly among the Liberal base of older voters, that outrageous text message that was sent out on Saturday. So I think that did have a bearing on the result, and that was, you know, it was basically the premise of if you tell a lie often enough, people might believe it, and unfortunately some people did believe that.
In Queensland and New South Wales, we saw big swings to the Labor Party, not so much here. Some commentators were saying that was because of the state government in Victoria. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think certainly the CFA issue certainly was a problem for Labor. You could see Bill Shorten didn't even turn up in Victoria for the last... He came to Victoria, but he certainly didn't come to any CFA seats.
Did he go to Corangamite recently?
Not from when it really got pointy. I think he came about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and he wasn't seen since, which was quite amazing, really.
Maybe that's a sign that their internal polling was pointing towards Corangamite being retained.
I would say that, and probably the internal polling, Labor's polling, might have shown that that CFA EBA was an issue. But as I said, I think the swings that you probably saw in Queensland and New South Wales too were, I think, Mediscare had a lot to do with that.
Well, in your booths, did you have people from either the CFA or people saying they were, you know, representing the CFA and taking a stand, or even the UFU? Because I heard at some booths you had people in UFU firefighter gear giving out stuff.
The UFU were there, the ETU were there, who else was there from the CFMEU was there.
All at the same booth.
Yeah, at one stage I thought it was a union picket line, the way you look down and I thought all you needed was that 44-gallon drum with the fire inside it and they would have been right at home. It was just a ridiculous overkill. I don't mind people, you know, if you've got volunteers for the candidates actually handing out material, but it's so intimidating for a voter to walk up and see this procession of fairly large, burly men at times handing out how-to-vote materials.
Well, I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago because I went down to the pre-poll booth, the one that was near the Pulse in Yarra Street in Geelong, and there was someone there from the union saying, put Sarah Henderson last. And my point was, I just wonder if we're going to get to a point where only candidates or people representing candidates will be able to be there handing out how to vote. And this is going to be relevant to the upcoming state election in 2018, because at that election, you saw things like the firefighters there, the AMBOs, the nurses, and they're all saying put the Liberals last. And eventually, people are going to get frustrated having all these pieces of paper put in their face. But, of course, your side's going to say, well, this might work, so we'll put our own people there. So you're going to have, like, the firefighters from the Labor side, then the firefighters from the Liberal, then the AMBOs from each side. You're going to get about 10 pieces of paper by the end of it.
I honestly think we do need some reform in this, with regard to handing out a material. It just becomes a circus. I was at the Belmont pre-poll booth, and there were times... The voters actually couldn't get through because of the mass of people wanting to hand out material. So I honestly think we do need reform. It's certainly very intimidating for a voter, and it's confusing as well. Yeah.
That's right. So something's going to have to be done there, and also maybe in booth setup and just how much stuff each person can have and all that type of thing. So these are things in play. The other thing that might be in play as well is just some of the issues people have had with the AEC that could translate to the state election. Like, for example, running out of ballot papers. I heard in Corangamite there were big queues of up to 2 hours. Did you see that at your booth?
No, I was at I was actually at Surf Coast Secondary College in the afternoon. It was a good steady flow of people, but I understand Mandama had big queues. I think the so Grovedale definitely did, and I know the other Torquay booth at Torquay College did. And I think the issue there was some confusion because people were used to going to Surf World. It's been the booth here in Torquay for many, many years.
I see.
And people went to Surf World thinking it was the booth, and then the next closest booth was obviously Torquay College.
Right.
So they all effectively slammed Torquay College. It was still a reasonable-sized booth out at Surf Coast Secondary College. It was about 2,000 votes cast out there. But yeah, that was an issue there at the college. So, and I know Grovedale, there were quite significant queues as well.
That's very interesting. Now, I know you want to move on to state issues. So looking at the CFA, Christine Cousins said a few things on the show yesterday that I'll run past you. I mean, it just goes around in circles because they say, no, it's not, and you guys say, yes, it is. But one of the main points she raised was that there's definitely not a right of veto.
Yeah, well, this is the sneakiness of the Andrews government. It doesn't specifically use the word veto, but what it does, there's over 50 clauses in the EBA where a consultative committee is set up, where there are four CFA people on the committee, four from the United Firefighters Union, and you need agreement. So the clause says you need agreement of the consultative committee. That means you need 5 votes out of the 8. So if the UFU says no, it's a veto. So that's where probably Christine Cousins is correct to say the word veto isn't in the agreement,
right,
but the effect of these clauses is to give a veto.
And when you say there's got to be 4 people there, are they all from the UFU? Like, you've got the CFA, but they all are in the UFU and firefighters?
Well, it's the union. So this is using the MFB model, which has been a disaster. You've even got ridiculous situations at the MFB at the moment where you've had even the type of milk at a fire station has gone to the consultative committee because they couldn't agree on what type of milk to have.
I see.
It's absolute madness. So when you have if the consultative committee can't agree, then the CFA has to make, or the MFB would have to make, an application to Fair Work Australia. And this is probably the issue where Joe Buffone resigned, because he's the chief fire officer and needs to be able to move equipment and resources around the state and around stations as he sees fit and he thinks is to the best ability to fight fires. Now, the union can block that through the committee, and that's why one of the main reasons he resigned. There were other reasons as well, other clauses, but that would impede the chief officer doing their work.
Are there many paid firefighters who aren't members of the union? Because, you know, you could say we're going to give the power to the paid firefighters, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to give power to the union.
Look, as far as the paid ones, I don't know the percentage of how many paid ones are actually members of the union. I would venture to say it's pretty high.
Yeah.
But we're talking about, of career firefighters in the CFA, there's about, I think there's between 800 and 1,000.
Right.
So we've got 800 to 1,000 on one side, 60,000 volunteers on the other side.
And also, Christine Cousins said this only reflects or impacts a very small number of stations, so it's not going to have a massive impact. And
well,
we're all really,
it impacts the integrated stations, which everyone around us. So it's not just the integrated stations; it's those volunteer stations that support the integrated stations. So Torquay is one, Grovedale, because they are supported by Belmont or Ocean Grove. So the Torquay Brigade was going to have to wait for the Belmont Brigade to get here, for example.
And she also said that we need to have change because we want more paid firefighters, and this is the only way you can really integrate the two together, the paid and the volunteers.
Well, I just think that's... So, to me, that's a nonsense. This is a... the CFA has been an organisation that has worked very well. It is fundamentally a volunteer organisation that is supported by career staff, and that's the key word. Supported by career staff. Whereas what the UFU and Peter Marshall want to do is take over the CFA. They want to run the show. They're there to support the volunteers in their endeavours to keep our community safe. And that is the fundamental premise of the CFA, which the Andrews government is trying to destroy.
Now, of course, the federal government made this pledge before the election that they were going to update the Fair Work Act in order to prevent this from happening. Do you see that actually happening now?
Well, until we get... obviously, if they get the numbers, they will. But if until we see the final outcome of Saturday's election, then we just have to wait and see, because obviously, if they don't form a government, they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah. And now moving on to the issue of policing again, in Torquay especially, tell us about the latest here. What's actually going on down this way?
Yeah, well, crime stats again went up under the Andrews government. From memory here in Torquay, postcode 3228, there was a 42% rise in crime on the latest statistics. Again, the same categories, burglaries, aggravated burglaries, thefts, break-ins. Torquay is definitely being targeted by gangs who are breaking into houses and stealing cars.
And what do you think needs to happen? Obviously, we spoke to Lisa Neville, and this is last week. She said that there's been a massive increase in police now. And
there's been no there's been no increase in police.
Wasn't there a graduation or something?
Well, we might have had 20-odd officers graduate. Now, that's 20-odd officers around the entire state of Victoria. The estimates from the Police Association is we need approximately 1,800 to 2,000 officers right now. The government beats their chest about putting on these additional police, but these additional police are over the next 4 years. When you look at the budget papers don't lie. So these 400-odd police that they've promised are going to be over the next 4 years, out to 2020, 2021. And the other issue is the Chief Commissioner has already stated he wants to put most of them into the growth areas of Melbourne.
So this is mainly something that you just have to put money into?
Well, you have to train the officers. It's as simple as that. We've got growth. We grow by 100,000 people a year in Victoria. We've had 2 years of inaction, almost 2 years of inaction now by the Andrews government in not putting on additional police. That's going to hurt.
Well, Andrew, thank you very much for coming down this morning. It was an interesting conversation, as always, and we might see you back in the studios in Geelong next summer, and maybe even back down here. You never know.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew Kados there, the member for South Barwon in the Legislative Assembly. We'll go to a break, and Elaine Carbine, CEO of the G21, will join us next. This is 94.7 The Pulse.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.